time for Wednesday's hour number two on Hashtag Daily K with your host, Peter Bint. Korean dramas, movies, and even lyrics. Why is the world paying attention to Korean stories?
From classics to modern masterpieces, time to dig deep into the charms of Korean literature.
Oh, check it out. With Paul.
That's right, Mr. Matthews is
here. Mr. Matthews.
You right, Maffers?
Maffers!
How are you doing this Wednesday morning?
Why are you looking at your email?
I don't know why this email. This is actually Lena's fault. I'm going to blame Lena. Call her out on the show.
This is not Lena's emails. These are your emails.
Even though she's sick. Because she leaves these tabs open, right? Yeah. Email, YouTube, sometimes some news as well.
There was one tab open earlier that I was very distressed by.
Yeah, I don't know why she's looking at that. She might be a bit lonely. And then when I log into my account, it just automatically puts me into my email as well as YouTube. But yeah, I don't usually look at emails.
Look at the YouTube.
That's what I wanted to do, but I misclicked, didn't I?
Shame on you.
What are we talking about today? Budam Burden. What Budam Burden? What kind of silly joke are you going to come up with for this?
No, I feel really pressured now.
Yeah, you should. Give me an Ajay gag, a dad joke with Budam right now. Budam Budam, that doesn't count.
It's when you sweat a lot when you get scared. Budam!
Oh my goodness, that is awful.
You demanded it.
When do you really feel Budam, Paul? Or are you the type who doesn't really feel burdened?
Oh, no, I find like a Monday.
Really?
I had a deadline. Had to do 8 body percussion choreography videos
body
by the end of the
percussion,
day.
Body percussion? Yeah. As in like...
Not
that
the face.
Kind of thing.
No, never the face.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But like banging other parts.
Yeah.
Really? Is that a thing?
Yes.
Body percussion. It's the first time I've heard that term. Really? Sorry.
I mean, should I just leave?
No, you should tell us about your body percussion 8 episode burdens.
No,
work.
8 videos, not okay. 8 episodes. I'm doing a total of, what is it, 8, 16, 32, 40 songs.
Uh-huh.
40 chants, really, with body percussion. I'm filming next month.
Wow.
And I'm choreographing them. So I had to get 8 done by Monday, and I hadn't done them on Sunday, so I did them all Monday morning.
Wow.
Felt the Budam.
Really? And how do you deal with that kind of Budam?
I just do it.
And you just get it out of the way.
You've got to do it. When you feel the Budam, you've got to boo the dam. Even though the dam naz.
I feel maybe I'm in that kind of camp where... Once I feel that burden and there's no choice, you just got to bust it out, right? Even though
bust
you
what
feel
out?
The episodes, the scripts, whatever it
you
may be.
You just use ChatGPT.
Yeah, I do use that a lot. But you still have to kind of finish it off, and that's burdensome as well. I'm looking forward to the day when AI does everything for me. And
then you'll be out of a job.
No, then I take all the credit.
No,
right?
You won't.
No, that's what I'm going to
do. No, Elon Musk will take all the credit.
Yeah, me and Elon, we're like this.
Oh, really? Like this. I don't want to hang out with you if you're friends with him.
No, he's a very good friend to have.
Oh.
He can pull some strings for you if you like.
Oh, no.
But have you had a good week,
no.
though? We've done this in the wrong order.
We have asked
you about the hashtag, but how's your week been?
It's been all right. It was fine up until about now.
Really?
You know, I had a recording this morning.
Yeah.
And this person who was meant to be recording it.
Yeah.
Came in late. Couldn't believe it.
What? Really?
Yeah.
That is rude, isn't
it? Don't know what was going on there. Just I'm glad I'm here with you now.
Yeah, if it's a live show, you know, you can't be late. For a recording, you know, as long as you're not a stick in the mud, being a few minutes late, it's no big deal.
10 minutes, though?
Yeah, 10 minutes. It was. I think anything less than 10 minutes was fine. And from what I heard from sources, 8 minutes, 30 seconds late.
Yeah, but we didn't start recording till after
Today's
8 o'clock,
book
and we were meant to go at 7:50.
Consultant, right?
Yes. Oh, are we you moving on?
Yeah, yeah, we're moving on.
You didn't
on,
really like, want to hear about my week.
No, not at all, sorry. Unless it's, did something interesting happen? Anything interesting? Like really interesting? Not like, oh, I did body percussion. Not like that. Paul is delighted to be here, everyone. For our audio-only listeners, they can't see your face. He's smiling, thinking, Peter...
I'm not smiling.
Peter is one of the best hosts I've ever worked with.
That's a lie.
Yeah. So, today's book.
Today's book is called The Consultant. Do you know the Korean name?
No.
Consultant.
consultant.
It's by Im Sung Soon. It's translated by An Sun Jae. And it's a very recently translated thriller.
Ooh.
Yeah, something to get your pulse racing during these cold January days.
Oh, I like it. It does sound like a movie title there, doesn't it?
Yes, and it's all about restructuring.
In what way?
Meaning getting rid of people.
Uh-oh. Is that what going to happen to me at Kepyeon at the reshuffle?
Oh, you haven't been told.
Oh, no.
Oh, Peter.
Am I getting bumped off by a consultant?
Well, I heard there's a certain person who's...
Always on time. Always early.
Anyway, our narrator is involved. He is the consultant. But the twist is, there may be murders, there may be assassinations, but he is not a killer.
Oh.
What is he?
Oh, okie dokie, consultant. I'm trying to think, do we have a word for consultant in Korean?
Consultant.
Well, that's what we're saying today, but I wonder if there's a pure Korean word.
Why are you looking at your emails again?
No, I'm looking at the dictionary now, okay? Because, 상담가, but that would mean consultant in, I guess, almost like a counsellor kind of way.
But that's what consultants are. You have a problem, you go to them and you consult them.
I feel like this word also in English, though, has that connotation of like consultancy firms where you just pay a load of money for a firm to come into your firm and then just fanny about.
Why do they come in? Because you have a problem.
Okay. And this is what's happening in this book.
The clients have a problem. Person. Problem person.
Im Sung Sun?
Sun.
Sun, S-U-N. Have we featured them before?
No. It's the first time.
Ooh.
Absolutely, first time. It was actually it was their debut novel, but it's over a decade old.
Okay.
It won the Sege Literary Award in 2010. And Im Sung-soon's written, almost a dozen books.
Wow.
Including the award-winning sci-fi novel Ouroboros. And he also writes for TV and for film as well.
I see. So a very prolific author, it seems, since this debut novel.
He's not doing too badly.
Author... aside, translator An Sun Jae, we've done many times.
Yes, Brother Anthony of Taizé was his original name, but his Korean name is An Sun Jae. We've featured him many times. We focused on his poetry at first, but in the past few years, he's managed to publish quite a few translations of novels. And it's really exciting to see the range of historical novels to thrillers, to historical thrillers, to romance, to all sorts of things. And I would recommend search him out on the internet. Go and find his website, because it's a treasure trove if you want to know more about Korean literature and Korean history and culture and Korean tea. Plus, there's all sorts of his own translations on there.
Lovely stuff. Okie dokie. Siska saying, Paul looks a bit frustrated today.
A bit, Siska.
I wonder
More
why.
Than a bit.
I wonder why. Do we need to set the scene for our first reading?
A little bit. So we're going to start almost at the beginning. We meet our narrator, the consultant, mm-hmm. and he's pondering what is the most successful murder. And he gives two examples. Gives that of Trotsky,
okay.
if you know your history.
Oh, real murders. Okay.
Yeah. And then he gives the second one is of Kurt Cobain.
What? That's a bit of a conspiracy, isn't it?
Well, take a listen. It is really difficult to cite an example of a great murder. First, their frequency is very rare, as shown by the word great. Only murderers will know how many murders can rise to the realm of greatness. That goes hand in hand with a second reason. A truly great murder is not recognized as a murder. Obviously, if anyone who kills or orders a killing or commits one is acting with the intention of showing off like Stalin, that is not a murder. It is terrorism. There are people who mistake the two for the same thing. A really good murder, as Kurt's example suggests, is driven by violence, but is done without asserting itself. For this reason, it is almost impossible to recognize a great murder. The moment someone realizes it's a murder and proves it, the murder degenerates into something petty and normal. Therefore, the greatest murders are by no means ambiguous regarding the cause of death. Everyone acknowledges the cause of death, believing that they know what it is. This is a story about the company I go to work for. No, it's not appropriate to say go to work, because I don't actually go to work. So to be more exact, it's the company I work for. Maybe you work for the same company. Even then, we wouldn't know each other because the company is like that. Maybe you work for the company and don't even know that you're doing so. You yourself may not even know that you belong to the company. A former employee of a large company I met in the DRC told me, these days, people don't even know where they're working and who they're working for. Indeed, people do not know where they work and who they work for. Most of the people I met were like that. Of course, I'm not so different either.
You and your dad jokes. My daughter would have you for breakfast, seriously. Whenever I do a dad joke, she is on it, and she's like, oh my God. She makes me feel terrible for them.
I just really rip into her, just say horrible things to her until she started to cry. She's not going to beat me down.
That would work.
Oh, yeah.
Sure,
oh, no, I can destroy her confidence. And give me just 30 seconds.
You would make a wonderful uncle, you know that, to my little
well,
girl.
Well, sometimes... You know, you have to be tough.
Yes, tough love indeed. I don't know about tough love in this opening reading, but I agree with Stacey. It's a bit mind-blowing what he's talking about. This real-life murder of Kurt Cobain. Murder, quote-unquote, I should say.
Yeah.
And Tigger is saying, we all work for the company without pay. We should rebel.
No, you get paid. You just don't know you're working for them, perhaps.
That's interesting, isn't it? That concept. And then at the end, he says, like... He's the same or not so much different.
Yeah, well, for example, you think of there are certain franchises in Korea and you think, okay, that franchise is just one thing.
Yeah.
But then you look on a bigger company's website, one of the chaebols, and you see that actually this chaebol is running maybe 7 or 8 or 10 or 12 different franchises.
Yes.
But it's just not mentioned.
No. And, you know, a lot of foreign brands, when they come in through a chaebol.
Exactly.
And when I first learned that, I was like, well, this is a bit rigged, because I always thought, oh, I'd love to bring this British brand to Korea. Mm. And then all the ones that, you know, would be popular, they're already connected to those big companies.
If you want donuts or ice cream or things like that, it's already taken. And so, yeah, it's talking about that connectivity.
Mm-hmm.
As for Kurt Cobain, never actually says that he was murdered. Just saying it would be a great murder. There are these conspiracy theories, and they have been for a long time, that he didn't take his own life.
Okay.
And
that's playing on this story, this consultant.
Well, this story is all about conspiracy, because we're never quite sure what exactly is going on and what the company really is. In fact, if you're a conspiracy theorist, you'd love the company, because it's like, I want to get my teeth into this. I want to find out what's happening.
Oh, yeah. Sophie's saying he seems like a poor man, too much of a burden maybe in his job, and it can happen in high-profile things.
I think you may have less sympathy for him in a little while.
Okay, so we learn more about this organisation, or does he even not know about it?
He knows enough about his own role.
Okay.
Doesn't know exactly what the company is, though.
Yeah.
He just knows he works for them.
Oh.
And we start off learning about the people who get restructured. And he tells us that, you know, sometimes it seems like an accident or someone's, you know, taken their own life. But in fact, that's not the case. The company has taken care of them.
I don't like this. This is making me question every death I've ever heard about.
Well, this
now.
Is the thing, because the thing is, he never does any violence. He's never murdered anybody. But he has been indirectly involved with at least 50, quote unquote, natural deaths.
Well, what does natural death here mean?
Well, not as natural as you think it was. And so we start getting little bits of info here. And I'm skipping over large chunks because, you know, we've only got a short amount of time. Also, I don't want to spoil some of the juicy details.
Okay.
And we learn of his beautiful manager, who when he first met her looked like his perfect type.
Ooh.
Almost as if the company had picked the perfect person for him, or maybe even made, designed, done surgery to make the perfect person for him.
To get him into the company.
Yeah, and we learn how he first got into it. When he was a university student, he was involved in a writing club.
Uh-huh.
And there were lots of different writing clubs, but he loved murder mysteries.
Oh.
And he would write murder mysteries, and people loved them. The problem was there were never more than 100 people in the club reading his stories, even though they loved them. And he wanted to be a writer, but he's like, this doesn't sell, at least when he was a university student.
Okay.
But then he has a chance encounter with a stranger, a slightly older man, who says, oh, I'm a fan. I've been reading yours.
Oh.
And it leads to this job offer for him to write murder mysteries for a publisher.
Okay.
And the man says, look, I will give you, we're going to give you all the characters. We're going to give you the you know, the basic story, the settings, you know, where it's going to happen, all the details. You've just got to write, you know, how it happens.
That's an interesting way to write a story.
Yeah, it's not normal. And he said, okay, I'll give it a go. And they take him off into the middle of nowhere to a remote condo in Gangwon province. Mm. And he's left with a computer and an internet connection and food, you know. And he's basically stuck there. And he has to write this novel. So he's got everything he needs. He's even got sketches of the different locations, like the apartment or wherever it may be. He's got medical records of the people. He's got their daily routines.
These fictional characters, supposedly.
He thinks they're fictional at first. Uh-huh. And so he writes this story. And now he looks back and he thinks, I was, you know, it was so foolish. The amount of backstory I put into what was essentially a murder.
Yeah.
Because now he knows the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And he manages to write it in 4 weeks, sends it off, gets a week off, and then they give him another one to write. Okay. After a month and a half of being there, he gets a third one to write, and he gets a lot of money, gets paid handsomely, and he's taken back to Seoul for a two-month break. And they don't contact him. He's like, you know, we'll be in touch.
Yeah.
He's like, really? When? Okay. And he's waiting around. And one day he comes across a stack of newspapers, recent ones, and he looks through, and he's struck by a couple of headlines.
Uh-huh.
Headlines that match the stories that he wrote. The three fictional men he thought he murdered in his novels actually correspond to three deaths in reality. Same circumstances, same people, same deaths.
What a good idea from the companies.
Yeah. And so he then finds himself going, well, should I call the police? He's like, no, I'm not going to do it. And he manages to get in contact with the company and they say, you've passed the test.
Okay.
You didn't, you know, you're welcome to keep working with us if you want to. And he agrees.
Uh-oh.
And so he's in with the company, and he's plotting these murders, these assassinations. And he tells us more. You'll have to read the book if you want to know how he does it and what these murders are.
Okay.
And they're very well constructed. And keeps coming up with the most creative and the most untraceable solutions.
Wow.
He's on the forensic scientist message board, so he knows the latest techniques, so he's not going to get caught.
Wow, he's getting in deep.
Yeah, and then we learn a bit about his personal life. Mm-hmm. He sometimes has to go into an office to get briefed, and there's a woman who does the bookkeeping there called Hyung-young.
Mm-hmm.
And she seems a little bit sweet on him. Like, she will send him text messages and call him up for a chat, say, you know, how you doing? What's going on? How was your weekend? And eventually they go on a couple of dates. And on their second date, he's sort of asking, you've always got this expensive luxury brand bag with you.
Yeah.
I'm not going to drop names.
No.
And she says, oh, it's a gift. I love this brand. I love the designs. You know, if someone got me a tote bag from this brand, I mean, I'd just fall in love with them.
Oh, that seems like a bit of a bait.
For the next date, well, things go well, and at dinner, he gives her the bag that she's been dreaming of.
Oh.
Yeah. And as they fall asleep together in a hotel room, say goodnight, she asks a question. And that's where the second reading comes in.
I'm intrigued.
Just then, Hyung-young asked, aren't you spending too much money on me? After all, you live alone. We could just meet at your home. I'm a good cook, too. I knew too much to rejoice. You shouldn't nibble at a delicious catch just because you're fishing. Sashimi can be really bad for you. I refused in the best possible way. Don't worry. It's not a waste of money if I spend it on you. That's how precious you are to me. And I actually acted like that. More and more luxury brands. Other names followed once or twice a month. I had that much money. There was no other way to use it. Or rather, the more people I killed, the more my bank balance increased. I became a VIP at the bank, and it grew increasingly unbearable every time I saw people groveling before me. I've killed so many. Therefore, I wanted to spend money that way. On the days when I went into work, she would arrive with a present I had given her, and the things she owned that I could recognize increased. The bag she had always carried was replaced with other gifts I had provided. I was curious about two things. Were the clothes and shoes she'd worn previously fakes? And who the hell had given her the bag she always used to carry around? Our relationship lasted about a year. In the meantime, I had bought her all kinds of things, but she had never taken me home, never introduced me to anyone, to her family or friends. There were many excuses. I worked nights. No one else knew what I did or how busy I was. She wasn't a fool either, so she knew what it all meant. I didn't want to admit it, but I couldn't be her King Kong. The name Hyung Yung was too ordinary for her to live as the wife of a killer. She might understand that I could only buy luxury goods if I killed, but even if she accepted my job and compromised on buying new luxury goods with that money, I couldn't accept a woman who would accept killing people for her own satisfaction. I know this idea is self-contradictory, but I didn't want to live in a family overshadowed by murder. One day, suddenly, there were no more calls from her. I didn't call back, like I always did. That's how it ended. There was no grand farewell scene, no plausible farewell ceremony. We met face to face at work every week and nodded lightly. That was all. I tried, but I could not read her expression. She had a very nonchalant face. She, being patient, might have finally realized my limitations and given up. Or maybe, as she had said, perhaps because I bought her a tote bag, she loved me with all her heart. That didn't make any difference. I always knew it would end like that before it even started.
So we don't find out why they suddenly come to an end like this?
Well, Peter, it's a novel. Yeah. We don't find out immediately.
Oh, but it does develop thread.
I'm
just
not
tell me that. Give me that much. Come on, Paul.
Will you just let me get on?
All right, fine.
Tiggerish is asking, is he writing a story to cover the murders, or is he writing the plot of how they meet their demise? It's number two.
The latter.
He plots out how they're going to die. He plots a way to kill them so that it sounds natural or seems natural.
So it's not even suspected, right?
Yeah, it's like if Peter was accidentally to fall off his chair and hit his head on the microphone.
Oh, my goodness.
No one would ever guess.
If that ever happens, I want you to play this January 17th, timestamp 10:32. I love that, you know, that idea that he couldn't accept a woman who could accept killing people for her own satisfaction despite him doing the killing.
Yeah.
That's totally contradictory.
Exactly. And he's not told her. He's not told her. He's kept this a secret. Nobody knows apart from him and his manager and the company.
So she does the bookkeeping there, but she doesn't know what's going on.
She does bookkeeping at this office, which is owned by the company. Again, we don't know exactly what's going on. Is it a shell or not? There's lots of little juicy breadcrumbs here and there.
Okay.
But yeah, it seems like it's done. It's over. He's acting quite coldly towards her and moves on with his life, continues with his work, but he does actually miss her.
Okay.
You know, he misses their time together. And meanwhile, his mother, back in the ordinary world, starts nagging him to get married. It's time to settle down, find a wife, drags him to a marriage agency, and then he has to meet women.
Okay.
And this is something that does still happen in Korea,
of
with
course.
Some families, some men, some women, where you literally get put together by a marriage agent.
Yeah.
And he meets some very nice women.
Okay.
But he hesitates with all of them. None of them sort of, he's like, no. Until he meets Yedin.
Ooh.
Now, Yedin seems to be perfect for him.
Okay.
In looks, she is absolutely perfect. You know, his ideal type in personality, in her chemistry with him,
that's
the
great.
Dates they go on, the talks they have. And he's like, I'm going to propose to her.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, well, this is all seemingly very... This is like, okay, Pyongyang didn't work out.
Yeah.
Fair enough. But Yedin, she's the one. And he goes and he buys her a beautiful diamond ring. And he heads home and he's wondering, maybe she'll be there. And he sees a pair of high heels. He's like, oh, is she there? And no, it's his manager.
Oh, who's also his type.
Yes, and his manager is waiting for him. And she has an envelope.
Oh.
And she says, there's a new job. But this time, this job is a little bit different. A test, but I've already passed the test. I raised my voice without realizing it. The manager clicked her tongue as if I was being pathetic. Even the driver's license that the state scatters around has to be renewed, so surely it's natural. But you don't take the test again every time. There are so many accidents for exactly that reason. Because people don't take the test again every time. You know what the company is like. She snorted and turned her eyes back to the envelope. Maybe it's hard, killing someone you know, but this person is in a bit of trouble. The manager smiled. Suddenly my mind went blank. An acquaintance? An acquaintance? The word was circulating in my head, destroying everything. The ring, the happiness of the last few months, the excitement, the bright times, all had been shattered by just a few words. I stood frozen, forgetting to take off my coat. When I came to my senses, the manager had already left and only the envelope remained. It was neatly and clearly placed on the table. Who might it be? Who might this person be whom she said I knew? Which of the people I knew would I find difficult to kill? I tried to guess who might be indicated in the envelope, but I already knew. There was no need to worry because there was only one person who had been in and out of my house. The computer was full of documents that should not have been seen, and the locked closet still contained records of the last person killed. I cleaned the whole house, washed the laundry, and reorganized the drawers. I also tidied up all the records in the closet, but the envelope was still there. I washed the dishes, threw away the food scraps left in the drain of the sink, washed the car, and sorted the trash. Still, the envelope was there. I sorted out the receipts I'd collected over the past 4 years, dismantled the computer, scrubbed the sink and drain hole. All the messy rubbish stimulated my diaphragm. I kept throwing stuff away. Still, the envelope was there. If anyone asks me about despair, I'll answer that it's shaped like a light beige envelope. At least it was for me. It took me 3 days to open the envelope. Then it was not because I found the courage, but because I was so afraid and distressed that I couldn't stand it anymore. I didn't make any rash decisions. Save her and I myself would die. I would not have been afraid if I had had such a wonderful conviction, but even if I risked my life to spare hers, if she really knew something she wasn't supposed to know, it would be no different than breaking a rock with an egg. I didn't think I could stop the company just by trying. After all, I didn't even know the real identity of the company. I opened the envelope. There were papers. I stood them up and tapped them on the edge of the table. The weight of the neatly arranged documents felt too heavy. I turned over the first page. A picture. A familiar face. I stared into the eyes of the person who was to embrace death.
Got to kill his fiance, the lady that he wants to marry. Surely that's it, right?
Not going to tell you.
Is this towards the end?
No, it's about 2/3 of the way through.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Still a big chunk.
There's a big
to go.
Chunk. Not going to tell you what's going to happen. You can guess all you like. You'll have to buy, rent, borrow, or steal the book. Don't steal the book. Please don't steal the book. That's wrong.
This is why you should never, or if you are going to, think twice about getting into murder as an industry and business, right?
But you'll make a killing.
Jennifer Woods says, I'm so intrigued. It makes you almost question reality. Do we really do this or is it all just in our heads?
You know, Peter's just an actor. He's not a real person.
I'm an avatar, in fact, actually. I prefer that label.
His name's actually Susan.
Jennifer says, running theory for part three, he has to write the story for either his first love or intended spouse's demise.
Could it be? Could it be? Could it
be? I'm going to throw something else out there. I reckon
he's going to kill Peter Bint.
Maybe himself.
Ooh.
Or the manager.
Ooh.
Or both.
Ooh. I don't know.
Or
I
mean, neither.
I do know. I've read the book.
Yeah. Were you satisfied, Paul?
About what? About who
with
it was?
Who it was.
I'm going to say it was the right choice of the author.
Oh.
It's an intriguing thing, but I'm not going to tell you. I'm not going to spoil it.
All right.
Tigerish, meanwhile, is thinking about Hyungyung and saying, I have to wonder if the lady felt like the protagonist was just using her. And that is why the calls ended. Why did those calls end?
Who is Hyungyung?
Anyway, it's a story that puts you very much into the mind of the narrator. Wow. You don't remember who Hyungyung is? You don't remember?
No.
The woman with the bags?
No, but
the fancy bags?
Who is she? As in, like,
who is anybody? Are they who they seem to be? Is this real? Is this the Matrix?
And this does make you think about other situations, right? Not just working in this company,
yeah,
but any company and the people around you, etc., etc. Oh, I like it. It's built up really well there.
Yeah, it's if you love thrillers, this is a really good one. And it's a really thinky one.
Mm.
I don't know if that's a word,
thinky,
but I'm going to use
thinky
it.
Thinky dinky.
Lots of thinky dinkies in there. We know that he's giving us the information. We think we can trust him. We think we can trust him, but he doesn't have all the information, or at least he's not telling us that he has all the information.
Yeah.
And so it's a great little twisty turny one. It's got a really satisfying ending. And the author's note at the end gives a really interesting detail, because I was wondering all the way through restructuring, because we normally use that in terms of business, like layoffs.
Yeah.
And he wrote at the end of the book in the author's note that at the time he got the idea for the book, this was around the financial crisis. You know, 2008, 2009.
Yes.
And the Lehman Brothers had gone bankrupt. And many companies around the world were going bust, or they were laying off employees.
Yes.
And he saw a protest banner from workers that read, "Restructuring is murder."
Oh.
Because some people do take their own lives or just lose their livelihoods.
Of course.
And so it set him thinking of, what if restructuring was actual murder?
Wow. Oh, putting it into that perspective, that sends chills down my spine. Now maybe I'm thinking you could get someone to maybe take that extreme decision by laying them off or something like that. That could be another way.
It's almost as if there are people who don't read the contracts that are put in front of them and just sign them because they've worked for a company for so many years and they've not checked the details. In fact, if Peter had looked at Clause 4, Paragraph B, he would have noticed that, well,
that would have been foolish, wouldn't it? If someone called Peter did that. Your one-line review, please, Paul.
A chilling journey alongside an author-turned-murder plotter that lets us see how easy it can be to divorce ourselves from the truth until we are forced to face it.
I've got to say, to be honest, like, the real author, and authors of really, like, twisted tales, I often worry, like, what's going on in there?
No. I can tell you, I've read lots of interviews, and not so much about the horror authors, but about horror filmmakers, who are very much the same. Yeah. They're generally the nicest people in the world. And, like, Stephen King is a really great guy.
What happens to get them to, you know, create this in their heads, I wonder?
It's catharsis. It's all fantasy.
I hope so. Next week's book, Paul.
One day, Peter took one step too far. He slipped and fell. Next book, Selected Poems of Kim Sakgat, translated by Kevin O'Rourke. It's available for free online. Let us know if you read it before we feature it next week.
Fabulous. Thank you for today's readings. Love that.
Thanks to everyone. Thanks to the Literary Translation Institute of Korea for help with copyright permission. Thanks to Im Song Soon for his book and to Anson Jae for his translation. I will be back next week with another book, unless...
You can listen to Check It Out with Paul Matthews on Arirang Radio's hashtag Daily K every Wednesday from 10 a.m. KST.